Welcome to Gluck Radio. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, executive life coach and master problem solver. Today we're joined in the studio by Kitty Cavalier, a burlesque dancer and seduction expert, who will talk about the art of seduction. Between Betsy's study on seduction and Kitty's teaching of it, we're going to be in one room with the country's two leading experts on seduction. So just hold on. Kitty will broaden our definition of seduction from sex appeal to a kind of spiritual magnetism that can have an effect on everything from a mistress to a mother. Can everyone possess seductive techniques? Does any of it have to do with looks?
I am so excited to have my personal friend Kitty on our show. Not only does she breathe life into the principles of my book, Seductress, but she adds her own vitality in her seduction classes and workshops. Her understanding of seduction is comprehensive and holistic, and she'll share with us how you can get in touch with your inner goddess. This isn't just about sex, but about body, mind, and soul.
So, Kitty, welcome to our show. I could just see when you came in, you kind of lit up the room. You have the title of Seduction is Not What You Think.
Thank you.
The moment you came in, we could tell that you have that seductress way about you. But when most people think about seduction, they think about bringing someone into your sexual field as opposed to simply your field of influence or your field of charm. So tell me, what is seduction? How does it work? And why are you so good at it?
Well, it takes one to know one, Dr. So seduction to me is basically attraction in action. And, you know, what we're conditioned to believe about seduction is that it is primarily a form of manipulation, a way of capitalizing on a person's vulnerabilities in order to have your way and control a situation. But the kind of seduction that I teach and that I practice is what I call sacred seduction, which is a way of using seduction outside just the context of love and sex relationships and using that energy bringing that energy into every experience, every interaction that you have. Including, you know, walking into a radio program and putting on a pair of headphones.
I love actually that explanation. And I want to go one step further, because when you talk about manipulation, when people hear that word, they hear it negatively. Mm-hmm. I hear it very positive. To manipulate means to position, mm-hmm. just the way a heart surgeon would position the operatory in your heart in order to heal. It's all about the intent of the manipulator.
Exactly.
Okay, and the seducer, it's all about the intent of the seduction. Mm-hmm. Because if we seduce a child to believe in themselves, if we seduce a person to believe that they have value, or even the fact that they're still attractive, we've done something good.
Okay, can I already tell you why I love you?
Tell me. Yes, you can absolutely tell me why you love me.
Because I often say in my explanations of seduction, you know, you can seduce a child to go to bed on time. And often people get all riled up because I've used the word child and seduction in the same sentence. And so I high five.
High five. It just shows you how we're so pre-programmed to react to words.
Yes.
Okay. And not to ask ourselves, what do they mean?
Exactly.
You know, it is the positive seduction that, in fact, is the only thing that's separating us from living in a chaotic world where there is the negative seduction to have people believe that they are less than valuable.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Exactly. So. And like, you know, when it comes to being seductive, whenever I ask the question, like, what do you find seductive? The number one answer is always confidence. And when we think about, like, where does confidence come from? It comes from a trust and a deep appreciation of exactly who you are. And celebrating one's differences or quote-unquote flaws rather than, you know, trying to hide them. Like a seductress, in my opinion, doesn't know the sensation of shame. You know, it's a foreign concept to her. She is a woman who possesses this kind of self-assurance that is almost numinous because it transcends all of the cultural molds around what a woman should be. And so she puts all of that to the side and allows herself to surrender to what she wants to be. And that is incredibly magnetic and attractive.
And not only do I agree, but what happens is that she doesn't give someone the power to judge her. She knows her strengths. She knows her flaws. She doesn't give a shit what people think, which doesn't make her narcissistic. It means she's not going to be controlled by it.
Exactly. Okay. Like Betsy.
Like Betsy, who we also love.
Well, I always say, take yourself to the max. Don't sand down your edges.
Yes.
Angularity.
Please don't.
Angularity is what people love, and you want to be irreplaceable. Mm-hmm. That's so important today. We are living in a tide of conformity. And mm-hmm. to jump from the pack, that's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
With that huge sense of self, as I always say, the goddess is 8 feet tall.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and we're actually living in a world of anxiety because we care too much what people think and we're not living our lives. You know, and the ability to seduce a person often ties in with the ability to allow them to believe in themselves and that they're just fine the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as when Betsy pointed out, the seductresses and the seductors of the world, they're not always as beautiful and charming as you.
Oh, stop it.
But they
no,
do.
No, I'm just kidding. Don't stop it.
Don't stop it. But they do have an ability to make someone feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
And safe is definitely sexy.
Mm-hmm. And also to make someone feel attended to because they, you know, like whenever I embark on a seduction campaign, whether it's a lover or, you know, it's a doorman to give me the best directions, you know, to a place or a concierge to give me a great reservation, like I'm never trying to exploit that person, which is a stereotype that is often given to seduction. What I'm really trying to do is just love and appreciate them is exactly who and what they are. And whenever you are loved and appreciated for exactly who and what you are without having to change, that really helps a person relax.
I agree. It's a gift. It's a gift. When you tell someone something that's honest and true, and you had a quote from that. When you tell someone that's honest and true and it's a genuine compliment, you're giving them a gift. Now, you in turn may get some extra favor, mm-hmm. but in fact, you're doing it not at their expense, but at their gain.
Exactly.
Which is a win-win.
I think it's more than just safety, don't you, and mm-hmm. relaxation. I think it's sort of an interplay between elate and sedate. Because you have a sense of drama about you, too, that's incredibly alluring.
Moi?
That's very alluring.
You know, it's true. I was reflecting this morning. So I used to work in corporate America, and I used to work in this neighborhood. And, you know, I just would be tortured at 7:30 in the morning taking the train into Grand Central in my stiff little suit and, you know, it just felt like my soul was withering on the vine. And so to be able to come here this morning to the same subway stop in the same neighborhood and just be my glamorous self was, you know, quite a delicious experience. And, you know, you're absolutely right. Like I always say to my students, and this is something that I really have learned through reading Betsy's extraordinary writing, is that all of us, you know, not only crave the stroke, but we also crave the slap. You know, we also crave the smart, the sting of authenticity that is not just celebratory, but that is destructive in service to the greater good. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Okay. And the only probably qualifier I would have is that just the way every third grader is not paying attention in the audience until they hear their name.
Mm-hmm.
And that anything being said, as long as the person feels they have their name attached to it, then they'll take the slap, the sting, mm-hmm. because it's all good.
I like that. I might steal that, Dr. Clark.
You could steal anything you like.
I think we've taken difficulty out of seduction, and I think that's what you're talking about, mm-hmm. because the ancient goddesses had a very labyrinthine, difficult path to their holy of holies, the place of sacred worship. And that's ingrained in seduction. It's hardwired. Mm-hmm. So that when we make it too easy for someone, it's boring. And a lot of people like that sting, smart, the challenge.
Totally. I mean, I can't tell you how many women in my practice, you know, I coach and I counsel with.
Tell me everything you do.
Well, let's see. I work out of my palace in Brooklyn with my dog Winnie at my feet. So usually when I'm speaking to a client, it's from my cozy, seductive living room. And so I teach retreats and workshops in person. And then I also offer online programs and individual coaching. And so forgot why I started down this path because I started thinking about my dog.
We were asking you how you ran your programs of
right.
seduction.
Oh, and I was saying how, you know, my clients, like often, you know, when they're troubled by a love situation, it's someone who is just not giving them the attention that they are needing or wanting. And, you know, it's often very, really brings them down to earth to be like, listen, if this person was head over heels for you, you would have zero interest in them whatsoever. I assure you, you know, that the chase and, you know, the approval that is not easily won. In Betsy's book, in the preface, there's a segment about obstruction and difficulty. And there's that quote that about the meat. Something makes this... Oh, you have it?
I'll try to find
it. It's page 14.
Oh, my goodness. How well it's do you like, guys know each other? I come in with no notes. I read nothing. And
I know her better than she knows me, I think. But
yes.
It's like three quarters of the way down.
Yeah. Dearness gives value to the meat.
Exactly.
We scorn too easy a victory in love. That's Montaigne.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what happens, we have, I see so many people, and one of the biggest complaints that I have among couples is that there's no dialogue, there's mm-hmm. no communication. The communication is transactional. It's not intimate. There's certainly no eye contact. There's no flirting. What advice would you give a couple who simply is living a lonely existence together and there's no intimate transaction?
It's a really good question. And, you know, truthfully, I feel like I would have to meet the couple because I feel like it's different for every person. And this is something also that in my work I seek to clarify, is that when it comes to seduction, what is seductive to one person is not seductive to the next.
That's correct.
And so there really is no formula of, you know, like it's like there's all those tips out there like, go out and buy some fancy lingerie or, you know, bring her flowers. And all of that is fine and good and, you know, exists for a reason.
Except that she's allergic to flowers and she hates, and she hates lingerie, okay?
And lace scratches his or her skin.
Exactly.
yeah. And so, like, and, you know, often when a person is craving intimacy, it's not necessarily that superficial type of, you know, charade of, you know, lingerie and flowers, but it's a deeply transparent conversation that may need to be had. So, you know, it's hard to say, like, in terms of, like, five tips for more intimate connection.
Correct.
You know, like I don't think I could really,
Just one size doesn't fit all.
Exactly.
And the bottom line is that's absolutely true. It's why I appreciate Betsy's books because she doesn't do that.
Right.
Okay. She gives a much broader spectrum. But I don't like the how-to books because they don't realize each person has a different way of interpreting reality. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't fit.
Well, the whole essence of it is that seduction is an art. It's mm-hmm. not a craft. And it's not a set of techniques, as you point out over and over again. And all of these spells can be mixed and matched according to the person you want to seduce. I mean, Aspasia, the ancient 4th century Greek courtesan, had a school, actually, and she taught customized charisma, which I just love.
Mm-hmm.
So here's an interesting question. Is seduction an art or is it a gift? Can we really teach it, or do you have it to begin with?
Oh, I think it can be taught.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I do too. We both agree on that one.
I'd be out of a job if I disagreed with that one.
That's well, why I asked it. So this way we get you more clients. Okay.
I think the revolutionary thing that Kitty is doing is restoring an old art form that is the teaching of the art of love that has been not practiced for centuries, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm. And throughout history, there was always the idea that love, attraction, and seduction can be taught the same way as cooking or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we're living in an era that's really unique in that way, and you're bringing it all back.
Mm-hmm. Well, in large thanks to you and to your books. And, you know, and it's true. And, the techniques and the customized charisma that you talk about, like, that is one facet. And in addition to that, like, where I find seduction is in this day and age is that what people come to me for is not just instruction, but also validation. You know, because there are so many schools of thought out there about what is seductive, and there is so much conditioning around what it means to be a seductive person, that if you don't meet this impossible list of benchmarks, you know, you feel like you're disqualified from the game. And so in my classes and in my retreats, that's a really big component, is my own validation of each person's unique code of seduction, and then also allowing each person to see each other's seductive qualities for what they are, which eliminates the stench of competition and gives way to this beautiful co-creation.
Do you teach any practical skills, like dance and mm-hmm. And burlesque, for example?
Yeah. So in my classes, in my live experiences, you know, I teach all different types of things, but, you know, like how to walk into a room and turn heads, for example, how to seduce with your words, how to eat with elegance. You know, Veronica Varlo, who's one of my seduction muses, she's also a burlesque performer. She says, if I want to know if a person is good in bed, I watch them eat, you know? And so, like, it's like little things like that, like those seductive
arts. I'm going to read that chapter.
You know, my mother told me the exact same thing.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. And so it's like these seductive arts are containers for where we can access that instinct of seduction. But when I'm teaching women how to walk into a room and turn heads, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, spine straight, girls, put that book on top of your head. And, you know, what I'm seeking for them to do in all of my retreats, what I'm seeking for them to, guiding them to find within themselves is the sensation of sexy. Because we're taught that, you know, to be sexy is an attitude, or it's a appearance, or, you know, that power lies in something outside of ourselves. But sexy, especially for a woman, is so deeply and intimately connected to a feeling. And when she's able to make contact with that feeling, she can bring seduction to everything from a catwalk to putting sugar in her coffee.
Not only do I agree, but what I want you to do is dispel a myth. Because when we hear about parental seduction, we're ready to call, you know, 911 and get someone locked up.
Mm-hmm.
What is the legitimate field of seduction between parents and child that doesn't cross a moral line, but in fact becomes something that is healthy, you know, for both parties?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. I mean, to me, it's just about broadening our definition of seduction, because for most people, the definition of seduction is to entice into sex, which is actually part of the Webster's Dictionary definition. But if we broaden our definition to seduction simply being attraction in action and desire-based action, you know, an example of seduction, using seduction as a parent, would be taking your kids' vegetables and making them into a smiley face on their plate. You know, it like inspires a desire in the child to have interest in that, and I want more of that, and what is that, and I want to play with that. And it's that desire which goes beyond the realm of just parenting and child, but it's like broadening the definition of seduction beyond the erotic, which doesn't mean that we have to exclude the erotic in any way, but allowing that energy of seduction to permeate each area of our life. I think that in order to practice that as a parent, the most important thing is for a parent to really begin to practice and embody that in themselves so that they can have an understanding, like almost a biological understanding of how to use that as a way to enhance their parenting and to make it easier for themselves and their children. An example of that would be, you know, a woman wakes up in the morning and how does she make, you know, and she feels tired and exhausted and just poopy getting out of bed. How can she make the experience of rising to greet her day more seductive to her?
Enticing.
Enticing, exactly. Where the alarm goes off and she thinks, oh, awesome, I get to slip into my rose petal eucalyptus bath now. It's so much different than, okay, time to pour the Cheerios.
Exactly. Now, going back to how you think, I want to throw something in because this is what I used to do with my kids. I have two girls.
Yeah.
And I used to, on a weekly basis, wake one of them up at 3, 4 in the morning when they were 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, really up to they left the house. And I would take them to play pool. I would take them bowling. I would take them to shoot darts. I would take them, you know, for ice cream sodas. And we would talk. And because they were a little disoriented and it was so weird and so special that to this day, they always want me around or their friends want me around because they felt like this is Daddy and me at 4 in the morning eating at a, you know, eating ice cream cones, whatever the hell we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when they got older, it got a little bit more crazy. But that's in a sense, one of the ways you build trust is by building unique experiences.
And it speaks to also what Betsy said about not sanding your edges. You know, like I know that for many of my friends who have children, you know, you really walk a line in these insular communities of like, you know, when wacky parenting takes hold, like, you know, it creates a buzz of like, oh, well, what do you think about that? But like, you know, it's like not sanding the edges, like having the courage and the boldness to do something as unusual as take your kid bowling at 4 in the morning and to just really like take pride in that and allow that to inspire unconventional techniques for bonding with for other families and friends.
That's the essence of seduction right there. I mean, as Kierkegaard said, a man who can't seduce can't save them either.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
It applies to all areas of life. It's all about charming that person, captivating them into some higher realm of thinking and being.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I have this belief in the wounded healer, which means most healers have themselves gone through their own pain. And I'm going to.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
Because you're right across me, okay? So, Kitty, is that true of you as well?
Yes, absolutely. I wouldn't be you know, I always say when people ask me what I do, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a nun or a veterinarian or a teacher.
Well, you missed both.
Well, I do have a dog and I'm very spiritual. But seduction teacher was not, you know, an available profession at the time. So it's not what I'd envisioned as my future. But, you know, my work, I always think about my work as being like a bone marrow match. Like my work is a collection of every victory in every travail I've experienced in my life. And it's just a mulching of all of those experiences together to create seduction as a spiritual practice, which is, you know, kind of my tagline and the name that I give my work, is adding that sacred element to the practice of seduction.
That is great, but go back to that question. Okay.
Yeah.
What was the valley of darkness that you personally went through that made you this bright shining star?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a dramatic tale. Are you ready?
Are you kidding me? I have my pins and needles.
Well,
that's what you're supposed to feel.
See how clever she is. It's working. So I grew up on a farm, on an 11-acre horse farm in upstate New York in a town of 1,000 people. And when I was growing up, so I was, you know, a very sensual child, like most children, you know, would spend entire days, you know, walking barefoot through the grass and through the woods in the summertime. And, you know, in my about page on my website, it starts with, you know, let's start, as all great stories do, with something really embarrassing. Because when I was a kid, I also had this high level of erotic energy and this obsession with bringing romance and excitement and just sparkle to life. So I would make out with everything.
I'm trying to see your tongue kiss a rock, okay?
Imagine it, because it probably happened. I would make out with my swing set, the wall, my hand, the mirror. Like, I just was obsessed with kissing. And, you know, I would create these grand romantic scenes, like where I would put a picnic blanket out on our front lawn. And, you know, I would take Ritz crackers and put them on a plate. And all of a sudden it was fine china and, you know, chocolate covered strawberries. And, you know, I would be relaxing in the arms of a great love. And, you know, like there was not a lot of romance and not a very healthy relationship to pleasure in my home and, not, you know, culturally for any of us growing up, particularly because I grew up in a very religious family. And so as I got older, that desire for magic got, you know, pushed farther and farther down, because it wasn't safe for me to have it exist as I got older and older. Like, everybody expects magic.
Was it
from
like a
child.
Pentecostal family or evangelical?
Catholic. Even worse.
They're close, okay? They're close.
But, and I'm also just want to qualify so that, you know, my parents don't feel forsaken. You know, I am also very grateful. Like I said, I wanted to be a nun when I was a kid, and I'm really grateful for that very strong spiritual connection that my upbringing gave me. And it's definitely a big part of my work now. But how the squelching of that magic manifested in me was in an eating disorder and an extreme negative body image issues. So, you know, as I grew older, like, I just wanted so desperately to fit in. I wanted so desperately to be like other people, or to be like these icons that you see in the media or the popular girls at school. And so, you know, everything became about whether or not I had been good or bad with my food, with my weight, with my exercise. And, you know, I really internalized all of that darkness and blamed all of that on myself, to the point of where, you know, I couldn't even wear short sleeves in the summertime because I carried so much shame about my body, which looked really no different than it does now today.
Which, by the way, looks great.
Oh. Well, thank you. And so as I got older, I moved out of my parents' house, and I moved to New York City. And moving from a town of 1,000, living on a 13-acre farm, to a little apartment in Brooklyn, all of a sudden it was like, not only like not fitting in was not my issue. Like, I wasn't weird enough, you know. Like, you can't be weird enough when you live. And all of a sudden it was that I wasn't conforming enough. Now it's like, oh God, I'm not unique enough. And so, like, it was this just long path with a lot of isolation and a lot of shame and a lot of disenfranchisement from the body and from the sensual and from feeling like I could possess the qualities that made a woman, quote unquote, sexy or seductive.
What was the healing? What was the turn?
The turn was when I went to a burlesque show for the first time.
Really? Tell me about it.
So I went to a burlesque show, which was a really big deal for me because, you know, being in the presence of that level of sensuality was...
Taboo
and just frightening to me at the time. And what I saw that night changed my life forever, because what I saw on the burlesque stage was that here were women who were literally stripping away any barrier that kept the world from seeing their quote-unquote flaws. And rather than trying to hide them or minimize them, they flaunted them and they brought them out even more. And these were women who, you know, were not the quote-unquote perfect female body. They had back fat. They had cellulite. Some of them were in their 40s. You know, they had double A size breasts or like G size breasts. And it was just like this variety of women and beauty that was, and what was so striking to me about it is that their ability to captivate had very little to do with the costume or the dance moves, but it was their ownership of themselves that was so compelling and so captivating. And that totally changed my life. And that essentially, you know, whenever I do burlesque or I teach a burlesque portion in my classes, I'm not a burlesque expert and I don't perform burlesque full time. But what I love about the dance of burlesque is that it's actually a physical demonstration of sacred seduction. You know, it's taking the layers and stripping you down to your most vulnerable, which we are taught is the part of ourselves that we should keep most guarded. And it's putting that part of yourself out for the whole world to see from a place of pride and from a place of deep, deep love.
And it's playful too.
Mm-hmm. It's very playful. It's very, yeah, it's not, one thing, burlesque is not as serious.
and
it's not pole dancing.
And I would say that night you really went to church.
I did. You're so right. You're so right.
But you know that the sex and sacred have been united for most of human history, and it's only fairly recently. I mean, if you think 25,000 years, most scholars speculate humankind worshipped a goddess,
mm-hmm.
and sacred dance was very much at the center of goddess worship. So
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you were really plugging into something very primordial.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the feeling that I get whenever I see burlesque or I perform burlesque, mm-hmm. is like it's connecting me to this, you know, like I said before, like this numinosity that, is that a word?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
If it's not, it is now.
this numinosity that you know, that is so at the heart of true seduction. Because we're taught that seduction is, you know, a game of the mind, like controlling the circumstances, controlling the person, all of that kind of thing. But real, true, sacred seduction is a game of listening to the body and allowing the body and the instincts to take over, which is exactly what happens in the act of burlesque.
And I would say when you're seducing outside, it's also a game of feeling another person's energy,
mm-hmm.
and asking yourself what it is that I could do to change their energy,
mm-hmm.
and to make it a better day for them, and that becomes part of seduction as well.
But part of burlesque that fascinates me is it goes back to the old definition of flirtation. I mean, the tension of having and not having and this oscillation between yes and no and assent and dissent. Apparently, that can really create and heighten desire.
Mm, absolutely. Absolutely.
The tease.
I mean, like, that is what makes burlesque different, is that it's a strip tease. You know, it's and it's so interesting. It's such a great demonstration of how, you know, it would be very easy for anyone to go out there and pasties in a G-string. But that's not the point. You know, the point, the desire is the point. The journey is the point. And so it is with seduction as well.
As the French philosophers say, seduction is the imaginary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's what you do in burlesque.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the big mistake that people actually make with drugs and with wine, that a glass of wine over dinner could be incredibly sexy, where, you know, two or three bottles, all of a sudden, you're trying to get someplace and you lose the point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the very thing that in small quantities creates a lot of energy and tension. And when you want to get someplace too fast, you know, I had this expression that I used to say is that emotional intimacy freezes when sexual intimacy is created. So when I would tell young people, you know, again, I grew up in a liberal Jewish home, which means anything went. There were no rules. Okay. I mean, literally no rules. But I would say that, you know, to my own kids, listen, reach a level of whatever that takes you of emotional intimacy and emotional closeness, because otherwise then it only becomes about sex and you don't feel free to become yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you allow a person to judge you, it's the equivalent of a blind man coming up to you and say, "Kitty, I don't kind of like what you're wearing." Now, if that upsets you, tell me, Kitty, what's the problem? If a blind man doesn't like what you're wearing and it bothers you, what's the problem?
He hasn't touched me yet.
That's his problem. She has good answers. The problem, but I like that. The problem is that you gave him sight and he never had it.
Yeah. That's,
you gave him sight.
Right.
And
right.
We give people powers that they don't possess.
Right.
People who judge us, they don't know us.
Right.
How do you judge what you don't know?
Yeah.
Okay. And we're constantly giving people that power to tell us who we are when they don't have a clue. Most people's parents don't have a clue who you are.
Well, I think that's what Kitty says. The first thing that she does in her workshops is to really deprogram women mm-hmm. and detox them from a society that's really media poisoned.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I want to hear more about your retreats and what happens there, unless that's a secret.
No, please. Well, one retreat I have coming up that I'm so excited about is I'm taking a group of women to New Orleans in September. And the reason I'm so excited about this retreat is because in my retreats, like my retreats are really experiential, you know, because I believe that in order for a woman to locate her own seductive instincts, what's required is for her to have experiences within her senses and within her body, so that it's not necessarily that she's learning something new, but she's remembering something that her body and her seductive nature has always possessed. And what better place to bring that out than the steamy heat of New Orleans?
And the smells and the music.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so every time I bring a woman on a retreat, you know, it's a combination of, you know, actual concrete tools and techniques and the people that they meet that they will continue their seduction journey with. But it's also, you know, the experience of being removed from their everyday environment so that they can truly immerse themselves and surrender to the experience of being a sacred seductress. Is that too vague?
No.
No, okay. It's not vague at all.
Okay, good.
You know, I mean, no. We have to leave a little mystery so people say, I want to sign up, okay? I think every woman should actually go to that retreat, you know, particularly women, you know, who don't realize that self-esteem is not getting esteem from other people when you can't absorb it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what you're helping women do, which I think is just, it's absolutely amazing, is finding within themselves how to love.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and when you know how to love yourself, then loving someone else is not that hard.
There's another component too, and I think that's courage. I mean, Venus mm-hmm. favors the bold, as they say,
mm-hmm.
and it takes moxie, mm-hmm. you know, to put it out there and to assert yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And women have been conditioned for centuries to be passive. And I think what you're teaching is put it out there,
mm-hmm.
Have the courage and bravery of your own body and who you are, and access your inner seductress.
Mm-hmm. And that's a
and
really
flaunt it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, courage is so essential to that, because one of the things that I seek to do in my work is not just restore the sacred to the act of seduction and sensuality, but to make it a practice that is safe for it to occur in everyday life, particularly for a woman, you know, whose erotic power and erotic influence is so often You know, she doesn't feel safe to call upon that which is so natural to her, and so she just, you know, casts it to the side or will do everything in her power to keep it under wraps because of its extraordinary power, which in our culture can, if she's not given permission to use it in a way that makes her feel, that it contributes to her wholeness, it's given a, it gives her a sense of cheapness and, you know, using herself and, you know, just this kind of idea that, like, you know, and I'm just kind of, this example keeps coming to mind that, you know, my roommate recently was harassed to the point of police involvement on the subway for eating a banana. So, like, she gets on the subway, it's like, you know, 6 o'clock or something, or actually I think it was later, I think it was like 9 o'clock. And, you know, she's eating a snack. She just come from a dance class, so she starts eating a banana. And so there are some men on the train who, you know, see the phallic symbol and use that as an opportunity to just, you know, rail her and harass her. And she was eating a banana. So it's like when you can get harassed to the point of where you're in fear for your own safety just for having your evening snack, it takes tremendous courage to call upon your erotic power and the moxie and the flirtation that we're talking about in this interview, and to use that in everyday life. Like, it requires such enormous courage. And, you know, that's something that is very near and dear to me, and that I always, whenever a woman is wondering if she's being seductive or not, or if she's, you know, doing it right or not, like, just the fact that she's allowing the concept of seduction to enter her energetic and mental and physical field, she's already good. You know, like, she's already done the task. She, like seduction will have its way with her. Like, her having the courage to open herself to that is all she needs to do.
See, you brought up a question that I was going to, in fact, bring up. A man who is a seducer could also at the same time set boundaries, mm-hmm. and control those boundaries so that there's not a threat, that there's a great interaction, and yet those boundaries are, you know, they're pretty solid. Mm-hmm. But what happens with a woman who's just naturally a seductress and she and her intent is always to create warm and warm energy, and you're dealing with a partial lunatic who interprets that as, oh, my God, you really love me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you keep those boundaries intact? Or do you simply use intuitiveness of who you cannot use those seductor powers with?
Well, you know, I'm a big believer, as Betsy said, of not sanding your edges under any circumstances. However, part of that is listening to your instincts and your intuition of, you know, like when, like, so when I bring forward my flirtatious, seductive, sensual presence, it's not something I'm actually like trying to do. You know, it's integrated into part of who I am. That being said, you know, if some person is harassing me, I'm not going to call upon that part of myself to try to dispel that situation. I'm going to call upon the part of myself that knows how to be assertive and that knows how to set boundaries. And that's an extremely important part of seduction and practicing seduction as a woman, not just to prevent harm or injury, but also to prevent the exhaustion that we experience as women of constantly giving, giving, giving. Like I always say in my workshops, a crucial piece is the art of seductive restraint. And that is saying yes to that which you really want, saying no to that which you don't, which is one of the most revolutionary things that a woman can do, because living in, or that anyone can do really, because living in a consumer culture, not only are we afraid of offending a person who's asking for something from us or offering something to us, but we're afraid that we're going to lose out. You know, like, I just think about, like, a woman who's very, very overworked, and there's this party that she's supposed to go to, but she's exhausted, and she really wants to go home and take a bubble bath, but what if, you know, she might meet someone at this party, and she already said yes, and, you know, and it just creates this enormous anxiety. And so seduction cannot exist without any boundaries. The boundaries are what make our seductive power most potent, because it's what allows the energy to collect and concentrate rather than be dispelled and given out to anyone who comes into our field.
I think that's a great idea. So here's my suggestion. Next time your friend eats a banana, she should have in her pocket a bag of those little thin stick pretzels. and when someone is kind of giving her a hard time, just take out a stick pretzel and say, well, now you can feel more comfortable.
I think we're talking about here the essence of all of this, of boundaries and so forth, is that women by nature have the power of choice mm-hmm. in sexuality, and they have released that power of choice in the last few decades or maybe century.
Right.
And what the seductress does is recoup that, and to do that requires elbows mm-hmm. when you need them. Mm-hmm. So you have to be a big, powerful, smart character mm-hmm. In order to be a seductress. And that's where the boundaries come in, I think.
And you have to, it's like we were talking about before, like the obstruction and difficulty, the stroke and the slap. Like, a seductress has a relationship to darkness and to saying no and to disruption that is positive, because she understands the way in which it acts in service to the creation of what she really wants. You know, because when a woman says no to that which is not seducing her, she opens herself to the possibility of that which really seduces her. And that's something that I think is portrayed about the seductress, is that she's just this glamazon queen who lives on a powder puff, who, you know, is craving sex all the time and is just this kind of pleasure monger. And that, you know, like, that's a facet, but it's one square on the Rubik's Cube of what a seductress really is. I always say seduction is holistic. You know, it is not an isolated experience. It's an integrated experience.
And I like the part of no, which is one of my isms, that you never say no. You're just saying yes to yourself.
Right.
There is no no. There's just yes and yes. Yes, I'll please you. Yes, I won't. I'll please me.
Okay. But right. To get back to the holistic part, I think that's really interesting. I mean, you're saying really full personhood is what magnetizes people.
Exactly. And for so many women, you know, our erotic energy, that energy of flirtation, charisma, charm, pleasure, like I was saying before, is something that we are divorced from and disenfranchised from for our entire lives. And a seductress is a woman who uses that not just to her advantage to get her way, but to the planet's advantage, because an integrated whole woman is a woman who can bring amazing things to this world.
I could not agree more. And I want to say this for those who are really interested in learning about seduction. It is not an opportunity to, in any way, shape, or form, diminish another person's value by increasing your own. Mm-hmm. That a true seductress is, in fact, adding value everywhere she goes, okay, and leaving trails of hope and imagination and sensuality and individualism. Because there are great seducers of our time, men like Hitler and Mao Zedong, who did seduce countries, you know, but they did it with the power of fear and threat, you know, and that the one of the things that I love about everything that you do is that you're not leaving any trail behind of broken pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You're just leaving a lot of imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really kind of cool.
Do you have role models that you use for your students of women mm-hmm. from the past or women today? And who do you think is really a seductress today who can inspire us?
Yes.
I have my own idea, and I was wondering if you...
Well, I mean, for anyone who's listening to the program, Betsy's book, Seductress, Women Who Ravished the World in Their Lost Art of Love, is a catalog of seduction history. And I was going to bring my book today because... I would say the first, like, you know, 12 pages or so are ripped out and the cover's off. And it's just like, you know, because I've been toting it around with me for years. But One of my favorite seductresses actually is Eleanor Roosevelt, who is not a woman that we typically think of as being a great seductress of all time. You know, of course, there are the classic seductresses like Cleopatra and, you know, women who are of that kind of sensual reputation. But, you know, in that objective of broadening the definition of seduction to influence and to using one's desire to shape the world, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt has been one of my role models my entire life. And what I love about her is the way that she overcame adversity so often and the way that she allowed her desire to see human rights prioritized in the world come to fruition, not through force, but through just her own wanting and everyone being captivated by that wanting. Another favorite seductress is Mary Poppins.
I particularly like Ellen DeGeneres.
Totally.
She is one of my favorites.
Yes.
I want to talk about Julie Delpy at some point, you know, before Sundown.
Yeah.
Do you remember the end? She reminds me so much of you at the very end, the way she seduces that guy. As she does a burlesque and does a Nina Simone imitation, and it, you know, he cancels his flight home to his wife and child.
Which Betsy is going to do right now for us. Okay, Betsy.
I'm about to go into my Nina Simone. But anyway, continue.
Yeah. So, like, great example. Nina Simone, also an incredible seductress.
But go ahead. I didn't mean to stop.
No, that's okay. Like all of these women, all of these iconic women. These are all women who were change makers. You know, like what the common thread between them is not necessarily, you know, their quote unquote like sex appeal or the way in which they fit into the media's definition of a perfect woman or the public definition of a perfect woman. They actually went in the other direction of that, and they took enormous risks and they faced enormous adversity and enormous. What's the word when someone doesn't like what you're doing?
They hate you.
Yeah, a lot of people hated them. a lot of people trying to take them out. And that's what makes them so memorable and so captivating is the way in which they stayed true to themselves.
Kitty, we have to close, but I won't close unless you promise to come back.
Well, you are quite seductive yourself, Dr. Gluck, so back I will be.
Excellent. It's a deal. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Kitty.
Thank you, Betsy.
I want once again to really thank Kitty Cavalier for appearing on GluckRadio.com. Be sure to visit her website, kittycavalier.com, to find out how you could take one of her workshops. She'll be in Seattle April 4th through the 6th and in Los Angeles from April 11th to April 13th. Info is all on kittycavalier.com. Betsy, she was amazing.
This woman is an inspiration. She really is. She's taken all the seductress principles and transformed them and made them her own and become a real master teacher.
Oh, no, absolutely. She is, by the way, coming back. We have more because everyone is going to want to hear more on this. So everyone out there is going to want to actually tweet this up the wazoo because literally it was an electrifying program.
I think so, too.
I am Dr. Errol Gluck. Betsy and I both want you to remember, to every problem, there is a solution. Now, please, check out our other episodes. www.gluckradio.com. You will give up TV. Buy Betsy Prelow's books on the art of seduction on Amazon.com. They're entitled Swoon and Seductress. They'll change your life. Keep listening and sending in your feedbacks. Now, I want to plug one more thing that I think is incredibly important. I have always been working from 8 a.m. to 11:30 p.m., and we have to, unfortunately, turn away so many people because we just can't fill the schedule. So what we're doing now is I've set up a referral service for people who I am training. They already have their own training, but I am additionally training them, where you could get some coaching, some counseling, some life coaching that may be the turning point in your life. So stay tuned, call the office, and find out more about this referral program. Till next time.